Welcome back to the On-Call Nightmares podcast. I'm your host, Jay Gordon. This week, I think we've got a really great guest. His name is Colton Andrews, and he's the CEO of a really cool company that's building what's known as chaos engineering as a service, Gremlin. I really believe Gremlin's out there doing some pretty cool stuff. A really great, great team of people that they've put together. And I really recommend you take a look at their product. Today we're going to kind of have a conversation on incidents with Colton, things that have happened. One of them was weather-related, which I thought was really interesting. I was on call during Hurricane Sandy myself. At the time, I was working for a company out of New Jersey that was doing, I guess what you would call publishing and publishing rights work. So during the time, unfortunately, the building that we were in, the entire phone system and all of our data connections into the office had failed, and I actually had to spend a couple days both on the phone with different providers, and also I ended up making like a little POTS-based mini phone system with some VoIP services as well to put everything back together. It was a real just kind of cluster of really bad solutions that we had to go through because we never really planned for what would happen if we didn't have any phone or our ISDN line that we had. Yes, even an ISDN for faxing and things like that went down because we still needed to actually get faxed service information from publishers. That was the only way that that would actually get in. So, yeah, you've heard my previous nightmare and weather related, and I think Colton's going to give you some really interesting stuff to think about. So let's also remind you that if you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can. The information is Twitter, OnCallNightmare. You can also email me, OnCallNightmares@gmail.com. If you want to reach out to me directly, my Twitter is @JDestro. So let's get into the conversation with Colton, and let's hear what he has to say. Hey, welcome back to the On-Call Nightmares podcast. Of course, I'm Jay, and joining me today is someone that I think has put together a really awesome idea for a business and has actually seen some huge success out of it, and it's Colton Andrews, the CEO of Gremlin. Previously to before starting Gremlin, he was a chaos engineer at Netflix, providing some streaming reliability, so you're always getting your TV shows or movies. He built FIT, their failure injection service. He's been a big part of really ensuring reliability over there, and then eventually went over and just decided to start something on his own that really helps people get a better idea of where their pain points are and their solutions. So, Colton, thank you very much for being part of this.
My pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity.
No problem. One of the cool things that I got to learn about your company is just how really I feel passionate everybody is there about ensuring that people get the most out of their solutions and make a lot of good decisions prior. And I think that that's really what you kind of seem to be all about, is giving people the opportunity to make good decisions.
Yeah, there's definitely, that's important to us, as we've hired a lot of people that have felt this pain, you know, practitioners that have been on call that have, you know, gone through these kind of stories that we're going to talk about here. Awesome. I think that that naturally brings the right behavior. You get a lot of excitement and engagement from your team and a lot of focus because they've been in the trenches. They felt the pain and they care a lot about saving others from that pain.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about yourself, Colton, before we kind of get started. So tell me about like yourself and your career. I did a little brief intro. I know you were at Netflix. You want to tell us a little bit about like where you got your started and where you were in on call?
Yeah, sure. So I've been an engineer for 15 years. I worked for a couple startups in Salt Lake City before joining Amazon. And Amazon was my baptism into fire on call. I'd been on call before that, and I had, I hadn't even carried a pager before I showed up to Amazon. And I joined the Amazon retail website availability team. So our team's mission was to make sure the website didn't go down. And while I was there, I got to do a bunch of chaos engineering. I got to build a chaos engineering platform but I was also invited to join their call leader program. So at Amazon, the call leaders are an elected group that serves to manage and resolve these large-scale incidents when they occur. Mm-hmm. It's usually a group of 5 to 15. You're on call for a day at a time, because if you get paged, it's a very intense day, and you cycle through it. And we also manage that program, and we manage all the incident reviews. So I got to sit in on every incident review that happened for Amazon.com while I was there. One of the things I did when I joined is I just went through every recorded postmortem and read through them. 4 or 5, 6 years of just great context and detail.
So when you were working in these kinds of environments, let me ask you, did you feel that like you were at any point kind of overwhelmed by the scale of any of it?
I mean, when Amazon.com breaks and it ends up on TechCrunch or on the mainstream media news, and you were on that call or you're the one responsible for fixing it, it's a daunting task.
Sure.
You know, I was earlier on in my career and I was a younger engineer. I had a knack for this, which is why I got elected into the call leader program, and I did well. But in the beginning, that rush and that panic that you feel, you know, there are VPs and SVPs on these calls. You know, your mom knows that Amazon's down. It's a big deal. You care a lot about making sure it goes well and you fix it as quick as you can. So it's high intensity is a good way to describe it.
Absolutely. And so while you were at Amazon, obviously you saw that. I'm curious, how about like the impact of Netflix? Did you feel a lot of that similar, like, I would imagine it would have to be similar, a pressure because of just the exposure that you have.
Yeah. Yeah. So Amazon was a great learning experience. And after my time at Amazon, I really wanted to go deeper into this chaos engineering resilience space. And, you know, Netflix had come out and spoke about Chaos Monkey. So I was excited to go to Netflix and to go deeper. And, you know, I would say it was a little bit less intense. I don't want to do Netflix a disservice.
Sure.
You know, everybody knows when Netflix is down and everybody knows about Netflix. So you get that same public awareness, Twitter and your mom might text you, "Hey, is Netflix broke?" That happened once. And I texted back. I'm like, "I'm on the call fixing it right now. give us 15 minutes."
That's great.
But it was great because I got to serve as a call leader and incident commander, they called it there at Netflix as well. And so I got to be really deep in the engagement process and in the resolution process. And because I'm a junkie in this space, I was at every postmortem incident review there as well.
So let me ask you a quick question then. How long would you say you were kind of on call consecutively between positions, and how long do you think you've been out of that since?
Yeah, so I had about a 10-year stretch where I was on call, and 7 to 8 of that, I was a call leader, and I was a big part of not just resolving and fixing my own services, but responsible for the company's resolution overall. Oof. And then since then, it's been about 3 years since I left. There's been, of course, a little bit of on call at Gremlin, and you know, we take it very seriously because it's how we were raised, but not quite the magnitude and not quite the public facing aspect that we had at Amazon and Netflix.
You're definitely still a growing business, so it makes sense why you would be involved in those processes early on, and then it also makes sense why maybe the impact wouldn't be quite as huge, but still relative to your customers that are working nowadays. So I get it. So I want to talk a little bit more about on-call and things that you've dealt with. And before we do that, I have to remind the listeners of the podcast of the rules. And the rules are this, and I'm giving you this for your protection and others. Don't incriminate yourself. Don't incriminate anyone else. And please help us learn from these incidents that you've been through. So those are really the three things that we want to get out of it. And one of the things I'd like to talk to you about is you were nice enough to give me a couple example stories. And one of them I really wanted to hear about because I've suffered from the same failure. It was a Memcache incident. So I personally worked at a place where we early on had a ton of Memcache servers for our front-end caching, and none of them were clustered together. And if one went down,
everything went to hell. So I'm curious to hear how you kind of lived through a Memcache failure kind of situation.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Yesterday I was going through and I was trying to recall all of these incident stories I've been part of. And without the postmortem docs to go read, it's a little bit difficult. You know, as the years pass, the details fade, but the feeling of being in the seat, the feeling of resolving it remains.
Yeah, so that emotional impact lasts after, whether it was successful or failure.
Yeah. So I'll try to give, you know, the best detail that I can remember in a non-incriminating fashion. I like those rules. I have a couple stories I could tell that maybe aren't podcast appropriate. Catch me at a conference or in person and I'll tell you some crazy on-call stories.
Sure.
But yeah, so the Memcache failure. So one of the big companies I worked at, we were dealing with a failure. And if I recall correctly, there was an element of traffic shifting involved. And so in essence, one region was receiving, you know, more traffic than it normally was. And what happened is we just saw the cache hit rate for a service drop. Now, an important architectural detail here, one pattern you'll see often is we'll have a service, but we'll have a heavy cache in front of the service. And that way, the cache might be taking 10x the traffic that the service is. Now, what happens when that cache rate drops or that cache is unavailable is it means that service now has to take, you know, much more traffic than it does on a normal day-to-day basis. And so what happened is as that cache rate dropped, and really that was the first leading indicator we found, we saw the service start to go underwater. It couldn't keep up. Latency started to rise.
Sure. Now things are, I'm guessing things are starting to try to get back to origin rather than, you know, kept pulling from cache. Would that be a good assumption?
Well, and that's a good clarification point. So this isn't like CDN caching. This is internal behind the API caching, but sitting between the API and, you know, the dependent service.
So was there a call going to a database or something?
And
this was being cached? Yeah, so this was to prevent, say, thundering herd during a large influx of traffic overwhelming a certain service. So you're caching in front of it.
Yeah, and actually I've seen that pattern used to scale services, you know, much more efficiently. And so it became, that cache became not just a nice to have, it was a must have. And so as that cache begins to have miss rates, you see the service fall behind, you see latency building, you see things start to fail, and you see that knock-on effect where this was a critical service in the infrastructure. And so, you know, most of the companies calling this service at some point or another, it might have to do with, you know, authentication or some sort of important detail there. And so what begins happening with these knock-on effects is, you know, it's trickling back to the API and it's trickling back to the customers, and they're starting to get errors and they're unable to play. So we jump on the call, you know, we're digging into what's going on. We're looking at this service. We're looking at metrics around that service. You know, we're seeing this huge influx in traffic. Okay, well, where's that coming from? Well, you know, a few minutes later, we arrive at, okay, well, here's this cache that fronts this service and it's starting to have a huge miss rate. Okay, well, why is that? What's changed? What's happening? And this is my favorite and least favorite part of an incident is we've got a couple leading indicators. You know, the first goal of an incident is always to mitigate the impact, restore customers and make sure they get back to a healthy spot. And really digging into the various root causes and contributing factors can come second if we can restore things. So we're looking into why this cache miss is happening and we're just coming up blank. We're looking at logs on the API. We're looking at logs on the service. You know, we've got the team involved in Memcache and they're looking at what's going on. And really, we're just coming up blank. And we get to the stage, which is almost like the experimentations phase. All right, we don't have a good idea, but we've got to fix things. What are we going to do? And actually, I don't recall exactly what we did in this case. I think it was a combination of shifting traffic back and scaling up the service so that it could handle the increased cache miss load. But essentially, things calmed down and they went back to normal. Well, story's not over. that was a, you know, that was one day. Another day, I remember it was a Sunday afternoon. I'd just gotten back with my family from an outing, and I had to hop on the computer. I was at home. This happens again. And there was actually three separate times we had this incident occur. And again, we're diving in. We know where to look this time. We quickly identify that it's not behaving the way we expect. Oh, this is a reoccurrence of what we've seen before. Now, what do we do? And the short answer is all three of those incidents, none of them were great. Like you wanted bad stories. There's great stories where we found what it was quickly. We fixed it. We rolled it back. We moved on. In this case, it was like three up at bats, three strikeouts. We mitigated it. They were 20 minutes to 45 minute outages each. Mm-hmm. And we just weren't able to really understand what happened. And at the
I've been part of where somebody restarts something, everything starts working, and you can't determine if restarting that was really what caused everything to start working again.
So what was nice is we had some smart people on our team, and they were digging in after the fact. And what we found is we had to get into network level statistics on the caching hosts. And what we found was we were essentially, there was a bandwidth limit where once the once the throughput rate at the network hit a certain level, we started seeing this cache miss. And so we dug in a little bit more and we tried to understand, you know, where was this limit coming from? Is this, you know, number of open threads? Is this number of open sockets? You know, what, you know, is this around the link? You know, where is this bandwidth limitation coming from? And what ended up happening is we got an AWS rep, our AWS rep on the phone. We started talking to him, and it turned out that there was baked in on this certain instance type, like a hidden bandwidth constraint. And we had triggered this bandwidth constraint unknowingly, you know, again, when there was an increase in traffic or an increase in load to just these set of hosts. Now, credit to our Memcache team. They were running it so efficiently that, you know, the host was at capacity.
I got you. So you never hit that limit until finally you had a huge uptick, I would imagine.
We just never hit it, and it was not published. There was no alert. There was no warning. And so we had to go through three incidents and kind of, you know, look at all of the provenance and all of the data to finally distinguish that it was this bandwidth part playing a role. And then, you know, going and talking to the cloud provider and having been like, oh, you hit this limit on this instance type. You can't have that much, you know, bandwidth.
Undocumented like information or undocumented features, if you want to call them that, tend to be one of those things that really, really make an on-call service or on-call session pretty rough. I've definitely been through one or two where I'm expecting something and it's just not documented. Sounds like you hit one of those.
I think that, and for my personal edification, I think that's a pattern you see a lot. There's a lot of this inherent, whether it's tribal knowledge or undocumented knowledge in the system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, documentation about our system and how it runs and how it works with other things. There's assumptions made about your downstream services or your upstream services. And getting bitten by false assumptions is the story of every outage in one way or another.
I have to agree. It always tends to be the thing that you didn't look for tends to be the reason why you're having a nightmare, it seems. At least it has been for me. I felt a lot of those little incidents before where just undocumented features send you in a direction to which you could go down for a very long time. So I want to talk to you about one more rabbit hole that you went down, and then I want to just get some ideas about what you learned from really these incidents. Let's talk about you dealt with an issue where there was some weather in, I believe, Asia-Pac, specifically Japan.
Yeah, so the setup for this one, this was at 10 p.m. Pacific. I just put my kids to bed. That's how I recall the time. And there was an order drop. You know, there was a lack of traffic in the Japan region. And, you know, we hop on a call. We've got the load balancer team. We've got the critical services teams. We're looking into what went wrong. We've got our dashboards up. And it just looks like a drop of traffic across the board. Mm-hmm. We're not getting traffic at the edge. And so we're not seeing as much, you know, trickle through the system. You know, we're seeing less orders, less transactions happening. And it's like, okay, well, what's going on here? And so we're about 5 minutes into the call, and I'm call leader. You know, we're doing our due diligence. This is always a dangerous part of a call because you don't want to come out as the leader and say, well, it looks like everything's okay. Because yeah. you want people to keep that that edge, that pessimism while they're digging. You want them to always be looking for something being wrong.
The everything's broken all the time, always kind of thought, and whether or not you know it, it's still broken.
Well, and it's about not being complacent. You don't want people on the call feeling like, oh, you know, this is someone else's problem. I'm going to read Reddit while other people are investigating it. You want to make sure that everyone's doing their best. Excuse me. Everyone's doing their best to understand and debug and fix what's going on. So we're about 10 minutes into the outage. I've started dismissing some people from the call. That's one of the things I enjoyed. And if you want, maybe we can talk a bit about good on-call practices. But, sure. You know, clearly there were some services that were operating fine. Let those engineers get back to their evening. Mm-hmm. And then somebody pops on and says, hey, do you realize that there was just a large earthquake in Japan and there's a tsunami warning? And we said, wow. Oh, and we Google it, we confirm that. And right there, we had a pretty good inkling. Yeah, people weren't buying stuff because you know, more important life was happening to them right then. And, you know, we were on the call another 10 or 15 minutes. We still kept a close eye on things. We still ran down every signal that might have been an issue or something on our side. But at the end, you know, what we determined is, you know, when there's an earthquake, people are more interested in taking care of themselves and their families than buying stuff on Amazon.
So remaining vigilant, even when there's not necessarily something to repair, but to actually be aware of changes in the system or data that's produced by the system that makes you see, all right, well, that doesn't look normal, but I guess it's adding correlation by looking at global incidents, whether it's software related or it's something in the physical world that we don't have control over. So yeah. It makes a lot of sense, and that's a really great lesson learned that, you know, you can end up in a situation that's completely outside of your hands. There's nothing you really can physically do or virtually do for that matter. All the remote hands in the world can't stop earthquakes.
Yeah. Well, and you come to learn this, and I bet a lot of people that have been on call often have experienced this, but if it's the World Cup, if it's the Super Bowl, if it's, you know, a large political event, if, you know, all of these things show up in our systems, we see the fingerprint of those events in one way or another.
Yeah, I've experienced that personally, you know, working through events. Like I worked for a consulting company that worked for big automotive magazine. And every time a very big auto show came up, you know, we had to be extremely vigilant in ensuring that, you know, when new announcements came about X car or Y car, there are tremendous groups that want to find out about it. And they will all show up at the same time and create tons of traffic. But when that traffic didn't exist or you didn't notice an additional increase, you started wondering what's wrong instead of what's right.
Exactly.
So I want to kind of talk about some of the things that you took from both those incidents. So the thing that I gleaned, and I want to see if you can tell me if there's more, is that sometimes, at least for the Memcache problem, you can't necessarily depend on what's been produced by your vendor. And sometimes it's worth it to ask, what am I missing? I can you tell me if there's anything else other than that I can really take from that story?
I mean, it's your classic trust but verify kind of approach. You partner with your providers, whether it's, you know, the people running your colo or your data center or a cloud provider, you're reliant on them and things going well. But the truth is, failure happens, especially at scale, all of the time, regardless of if you have double redundant power sources and triple racks with hot swappable RAID drives, or you're running on Amazon. And so the prudent thing you learn, and it's a little bit of a pessimistic view, is that just everything can and will fail. And the way to protect yourself and the way to lessen the pain is just to go out and find those failures and suss them out in advance so you're not surprised. And so whenever possible, turning a failure into a non-event is winning, in my opinion.
Gotcha. And when it, I guess almost something similar can be gleaned from the Japan and tsunami situation where, you know, even things that you may not assume have some form of impact on systems may actually have some sort of impact. And I think we need to kind of think about human nature as it like kind of coincides with how incidents globally happen.
Absolutely. People are part of our systems. They're a huge part of our systems. And that impact, you know, and understanding how it behaves and preparing for it is crucial. One of my personal pet peeves is that on-call training is in general non-existent in our industry.
Absolutely.
It's here's your pager. Good luck. You know, you're smart. Yeah. You'll figure it out. And
it's amazing how pervasive that is. And I've definitely been a victim of, you just add yourself to the Nagios group and you get paged now.
Yeah. I mean, at least some companies will do some shadowing and some mentoring, but I always fall back to the fire drill analogy. There's a reason we run fire drills, and it's so that when bad things happen, people don't panic. They have practiced in a calm setting. It's, you know, muscle memory. They know the right things to do. And so that's one of my soapboxes is I think we as an industry need to do a much better job giving people an opportunity to practice. Letting them ask questions while things aren't broken and they're not, you know, in that 2 a.m. urgent high intensity event, give them an opportunity to build that muscle memory so that when things do go wrong, because they will, it's unavoidable, they'll be able to handle it in a calm, thoughtful manner. That intensity and that panic that comes, you know, which is in some degree human nature, you know, that exasperates events at times. People make, you know, bad judgment calls, and any way we can lessen the risk there, I think, is a worthwhile investment for our systems and our teams.
Yeah, I like to reference to the term muscle memory because I think that, you know, as we repetitively do tasks, we say like, oh, we need to find ways to automate those repetitive tasks, which is a very good, you know, thought. But at the same time, when certain tasks are repetitive because they're based on actions for response, say an incident where failure is part of it, I think it's good to actually know the direction to go in immediately. If your brain says there's a failure, first thing, alert the team via, you know, X methodology, whether it's chat ops or something like that, if you're in Slack, and saying, hey, I've started looking at this issue, let's start a trail of info. You know, I think that it's important to be able to bring everything together and work smarter. And I think one of the things you've definitely hit right on the head is training around that, getting people to understand the best ways to respond, not necessarily the quickest ways to respond. And I think that that's where a lot of problems happen, is people think speed is helpful when accuracy is far more important than speed.
It's a really good point. I've seen a lot of those side effects where somebody hopped on and they're passionate. They're trying to do the right thing, but they're, oh, I'm going to reboot this cluster. And it's like, whoa, hold on. You actually just made things way worse, or you just extended the time, and, you know, you wanted to help, but you know, it's okay to take 30 seconds and talk it through before we jump into taking an action.
So what's the one thing that you could say you learned the most out of your time being on call that you could share with our listeners? What's the one big high level tip that you think that you could provide to someone that is currently on call today?
So I'm going to give the call leader perspective because that's the seat I've sat in the most. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give not one, but like two or three little ones. So
sure.
The first one is there's some just being on a call etiquette. And it's funny because we're a remote by default company. You'll see some of this trickle through in our team. But if you're on a video call or a conference bridge and you're not actively talking, you should be muted. Mm-hmm. Hearing people typing in the background, it's a little pet peeve. It's a little bit of a funny one, but drives people crazy.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is your job when you're coordinating these incidents is to coordinate. Your job is not to yourself go fix the problem. Mm-hmm. And so that shows up in two aspects. One, I think it's very important for the call leader to be giving status updates. I would give a status update at the beginning of a call. You know, you hear that ding every time someone joins a conference bridge. At the beginning of the call, every 5 or 10 dings, I'm giving mm-hmm. a quick summary. Hey, here's the symptom that we saw. Here's what we know so far. You know, and then at the beginning, it's, you know, as service owners, log into your service, look at your dashboards, start looking at your logs. You look for things that might be out of touch and talk to me. And then later on, it becomes, all right, here's our current working hypothesis. This is the person making these changes. We're testing those. You know, if you're not making one of these changes, keep investigating, keep looking for things, but don't be taking an action. And this one might be a little bit debatable, but in general, we found, you know, only change one thing at a time. If three people have an idea and all three of them make a change and the problem goes away, what was the root cause? You know, what was the mm-hmm. one that fixed it? There's times and places where, you know, some things can be done in parallel. You want to be thoughtful about it, but you want to coordinate that. You don't want one person on the call not talking to everyone else, going off and rebooting their cluster or making, you know, global property changes while the rest of the call is working and operating on a different area. So those are the two or three things that come to mind for me for making calls run smoothly and mm-hmm. ensuring you're getting to the right outcomes.
Awesome. Thank you. So one of the things that Gremlin's doing, and I want to make sure you give you a chance to kind of vamp a little about what you're all up to, because I think it's really cool, is helping people reduce the amount of on-call incidents that are going to happen by finding failure in production early on. And would you say that's about a really good way of kind of describing it?
Yeah, that's definitely one part. The other part, as we talked about, is giving people an opportunity to train. Again, not just the software and the technical aspect, but the people. You know, when your system breaks, which it will, how do people handle it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, Gremlin, we built tooling to do this kind of failure testing at Amazon and Netflix. We did it mm-hmm. in a way that was safe. We did it in a way that wasn't necessarily random. One of my other soapboxes, chaos engineering does not mean randomly breaking things. It can, sure. But it doesn't have to. We built a lot of this tooling, and then we used that tooling to run these game days, to give teams opportunities to test and train, to test mm-hmm. their engagement process, to verify that their dashboards work well, to be able to go find these kind of issues before their production outages and hopefully fix them. And just having seen the value of that at two of the largest internet scale companies, we felt like there was a need in the market for people mm-hmm. to have tooling to do this in an efficient way. And the guidance and advice from people that had been in the, you know, that had been in the driver's seat, that had been through these fires and had learned. So that's our goal, is to give people a safe, secure platform for running these types of experiments. You know, not just a host rebooting, but network failures, packet sure. loss, disk filling up. And then our team guiding people, you know, as we want to build our SRE team and prepare for the failures that will occur, how should we go about it? And where should we start? And what are the best practices that we should follow?
Awesome. Well, it sounds like there's so much really great stuff going on with the platform you've built to be able to help people really get the most out of their solution without having to maybe get up at 2 or 3 in the morning all the time, prepping for the big, big problems before they actually happen, finding your pain points, all that stuff to me makes a ton of sense. So anything else that you really want to communicate to us? Because I think this has been a really great combo, and I want to give you a chance to just tell our listeners if there's anything else with Gremlin that you'd like to let us know about.
No, I mean, you know, you can reach out to us. We'll tell you about Gremlin all you want. But, you know, I think the thing I would offer to your audience is, you know, I've been on call. I've felt that pain. And so if mm-hmm. I can be helpful to the people that are on call, if you're building a call leader program, if you're thinking about how to run incidents well, if you just want to swap stories offline or online, I miss this. I'm a bit of an adrenaline junkie when it came to being on call. I don't miss the pain, but I miss the joy of fixing things. And so anything I can do to help lift up the industry and make life better for fellow engineers, that's why I'm in it. That's why I'm doing this.
That's really great. So you can get in touch with Gremlin if you'd like to on Twitter pretty easily. It's Gremlin Inc. On Twitter. You can find information on their website. That's gremlin.com, which I am still super impressed you guys got. And there's just a really cool world going on at Gremlin. I really love the people that you've hired. You've got a great team there with people like Tammy Buto and Anna. And just want to say, you know, keep up all the great stuff and keep, you know, let's help keep people sleeping at night, right?
Absolutely. And I'd be remiss if Tammy would be mad at me if I didn't mention, you know, we've been working a lot to build a community for people to just share these stories and help educate each other. There's an open public Slack. It's not Gremlin specific. There's a lot of tutorials and articles written. So you can find that at gremlin.com/community. But thank you very much for this opportunity. It's been great. And I look forward to sharing more stories and hearing more of everyone else's stories. We got to talk more as an industry about this. We got to share the pain and let people know they're not alone out there.
That's exactly why I started this podcast, because I really, you know, after talking with people so much about these pain, you know, stories, I felt that it was finally great to give some people a venue to actually like express it. And also at the same time, educate people on how to reduce all that pain and suffering that comes along with bad on-call situations. So thanks a lot. And like I said, if you want to get in touch with Gremlin, gremlin.com. We'll be back in just a minute where I'll close out the podcast. Colton, thank you very, very much for being part of this today.
Thank you very much, Jay. I appreciate it.
Great. We'll be right back. That was just a great conversation. Thank you so much, Colt, for being part of the podcast. I hope you all enjoyed it because I really did enjoy talking to him. Colton's one of those people that I've been really lucky enough to kind of get a chance to talk to here and there and think that what he and Gremlin are doing is just really brilliant. So give them a look if you can. Like I said, on Twitter, it's Gremlin Inc. You can find me and the podcast on Twitter. I'm Jay Destro, and the podcast is at On Call Nightmare. I really would love to hear some more stories from people who want to tell about their On Call Nightmare. You can go ahead and reach out to me via email. It's oncallnightmares@gmail.com. So please send me your stories, and let's hear what you've got to say. So thanks again for listening. We're going to have another great interview next week. Someone I think you'll really, really be impressed with the stories that they have. And hopefully soon you can be on the podcast. So get in touch and enjoy your week. Thanks again for listening to the On Call Nightmares podcast, and we'll see you next time.